Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be.
Listen anywhere.
Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Where do you stand as a leader? Are there things you would change about your business or organization? Welcome to What's Leadership Got to Do with It with your host, Rick Thiemann. Together, we'll explore the five dynamics that exist in every workplace, as well as answer some of your leadership questions. Now, here's your host, Rick Thiemann.
Hello, I'm your host, Rick Thiemann. You're here today on the What's Leadership Got to Do with It, the Voice America channel. My firm is called The Executive Group, and we've been in business for 20 years, and my guest today is Paul Dorfler. And today's show, we're going to talk about developing Salesforce effectiveness. This is a pre-recorded show, so for those of you who may be trying to call in to catch us, we're not here. But anyway, you can still call us, contact us at rick@theeg.com, that's T-H-E-E-G.com, and we'll be glad to answer your questions. But this particular program, and my guest today is Paul Dorfler. Paul is a previous guest on the show. Paul and I have worked together for the last probably close to 10 years with two different firms that he's been with. His second one that he is now Director of Sales and Marketing for, VP of Sales and Marketing for. And Paul's my guest because we're going to talk about developing Salesforce effectiveness and its impact on organizations. And I'll introduce Paul more formally in a second. But just to kind of set the stage for today's show and what Paul and I are going to talk about and some of the case studies and examples of things that you as a sales manager might be of interest or find of interest to help you do some of the things that Paul's doing is in being progressive in his new role there as a sales manager. But the relevance and importance of this particular show today is kind of near and dear to my heart because it really gets into my background over the last 40 years. 20 of that have been in business for myself and also senior-level positions in corporate America. And then the last 20 years have been in the consulting world, working with organizations. Much of that consulting work has centered around Salesforce effectiveness and is really the outcome of what we do today in terms of helping organizations drive that. And Paul's been a great case study and a great collaborative person along the way in terms of the things we've worked with at the two firms he's been with. So Paul is on the road, but calling in via cell, so we hope we don't lose that. But, Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rick. Glad to be part of it, and looking forward to sharing some great tips and tricks. So I'll...
Well, good. Well, to set the stage for today, what we're looking at doing here is there are some questions that I think that most sales managers are faced with and probably ask themselves from time to time. And those questions center around things like, why are some salespeople more successful than others? And what behaviors differentiate top performers from poor performers? What behaviors differentiate hunters from farmers? Are there specific kinds of behaviors necessary for different roles? How do we cut our losses and move on if we realize that we just have somebody that isn't working? And I think Paul's experienced all of that in my time with him, as you'll see with some of the case studies and things that we're going to do. The outline for today and the things we're going to talk about, we're going to focus on the hiring side of the selection of the Salesforce effectiveness. We're going to talk about the development and the coaching and the training and the use of assessments as a means of enhancing your ability to drive performance. But one of the things, well, not one of the things, but in 20 years of consulting and 20 years of having been in business prior to the consulting work that we do, a couple things stand out, and that is that it's been pretty consistent, and I don't care whether I work with Salesforces of 2,000 or whether I'm working with Salesforces of less than 20 or even Salesforces of 100, But one of the things that rings true that I've seen consistently is that 20 to 25% of a sales force is underperforming and not meeting budget or managing to sell to their quota. A couple of the things that I think sales managers are faced with challenges is that 20% of our salespeople generate 80% of our sales, and how do we change that? Salespeople today are viewed as a commodity, kind of a necessary evil. The traditional sales approach sells outputs versus transactions. The traditional sales training rarely sticks, and we've got some proof of that. We'll talk about that as we move along. And then how do you hire the right person to get the best person, not just the right person, not just the best person, meaning, you know, the best person means we've got a pool of five candidates and one of them looks pretty good, so we take the best of the five, versus waiting to hire the right person that comes along and continue to drive our search. So, Paul, just from that example, some of the things that you've experienced, one person I can think of specifically we talked about not too long ago was one of the last hires in your previous firm. And so what was the outcome of that one?
Well, they lasted about a year, which is what we kind of figured would happen. We did a due diligence. This person came to us with a book of business, which always looks good. Just did our due diligence to make sure that that's valid. But in the due diligence process and putting through the assessment process that we use, it really showed that there was going to be some major struggles, not only in our selling ability, but also the ability to work within the organization. And really, that's ultimately what the demise of the individual was. They just didn't have the computing power to deal with the complexity of the company, and therefore was, which we knew right up front was going to happen. Lasted about a year exactly, and then moved on as a result of not being able to work with the system.
Well, speaking to that, we're going to talk about assessments a little later on, but working between the assessment process we use and working between the interview strategies that we help drive and create, you know, those things surfaced, and I think Paul can attest to this, it was against my recommendation that they hire this person, and the organization went on to say, let's try it anyway. It was kind of the owner's final call, went beyond Paul's hands, but nonetheless, in that scenario, you wind up losing a whole year, and we predicted the outcome going in. Does that mean we're right on every call? No, but the batting average is high, which I think Paul can attest why he continues to use this. But I want to speak to those people that are listening or will be listening, and that is I want to talk about the cost of a mishire and the cost of a underperformer, and I don't think some people equate to that. And what I mean by that is that statistics show us that the turnover cost is 2 to 2.5 times annual salary. Well, it's much higher than that for salespeople. It's actually almost 4 times salary. But if you've got an organization and you hire 3 new salespeople, the odds of fallout, and let's just say there's a $60,000 overhead for that salesperson for first year, and you hire 3 of them, you're going to spend $180,000 or almost $200,000 in total cost somewhere along the line to bring those people on board. And if one quits the first year or gets fired, and a second one quits or falls out or gets terminated the second year, that means your 2-year cost is $180,000, not counting lost opportunity costs, not counting rehire costs. So the cost of a bad hire is astronomical, as we all know. But there's even a greater cost, and this is a bigger issue that I've seen in organizations over the years. It continues to amaze me. You know you've got underperformers, but yet you're hanging on to them. And I don't think that many organizations equate to what it costs you. So here's the formula that I use, and that is that if you've got a salesperson who's got a $1 million quota, and you operate as a company with a 10% EBITDA, you've got $100,000 in generated revenue from that salesperson's sales efforts. Yet, if that salesperson has a cost of burden of salary, commissions, overhead, and expenses, you've got $20,000, or that fee figures $80,000, your net is $20,000. All right, well, so let's just say you've got a salesperson selling at 75% of quota. That means you're already in the hole $5,000 because at 75% of quota, that's only $750,000 in sales. At 10% EBITDA, at $75,000 net with an $80,000 overhead, you're already in the hole. Yet we continue to hang on to these underperformers hoping that they'll cut the grade. So, Paul, when I first came to work with you in your first company, trying to get you to see that philosophy wasn't too far-fetched, but what were the challenges that we faced in terms of the underperformers as we identified them?
Well, first of all, we're all human, and we want to do, we work with these people every day, and the last thing you want to do is immediately, put together a performance plan that's going to move somebody out, especially if there's a there's a relationship there, and being a family-owned business that it wasn't very, there was a family atmosphere, which is good in one sense of the culture, but in the other sense of the culture, it was very expensive. We had a number of salespeople that were underperforming and weren't quite sure what to do next with them, and beyond the performance plan, what is the coaching and one of the conversations that you need to have with salespeople to either get them to perform, in some cases they did, or move them on, or train or transfer. What we typically do is with underperformers.
Well, when you look at then, one of the things that when we come into an organization, many organizations kind of question, some of the methodology that we use, because it's not unorthodox, it's just different from what most people are accustomed to in terms of the assessment process that we use, because we build a lot on the assessment aspect of things to help not only drive selection, but drive coaching, drive development, and drive our decision to know when to fish or cut bait in terms of when are we going to recognize that we no longer see ourselves as being able to have that individual become successful. So our process then to support companies like Paul's companies and the things that we do are really driven around first really assessing what's there. So in the approach, what we try to do is we try to take a real strong baseline. And what I mean by that baseline is the first thing we're going to do is we're going to sit down and we're going to evaluate who our ABC players are. The second thing we're going to do, we're going to sit down and take a look at our sales force and determine how many of those individuals are really able to execute our strategic intent at the highest level. And then do we have the salespeople that will be able to produce consistent results over time? And then as we look at which ones are under quota, how do we help them determine what their developmental opportunities might lie, and how do we help them improve that and help understand the shifts and changes that they need to make beyond just doing more of what they're supposed to be doing? In other words, the analogy is, well, to get them more productive, they just need to make more sales calls. Well, that's not always the answer. So establishing that baseline is one of the things that, as we came into Paul's company, is help set that baseline and set those standards. So in the sales force that we had, it was very quickly to assimilate that once we got the assessment data. So what came out of that is a revelation for you, Paul, when we first started working together?
Oh, absolutely. And, one of the things that was glaringly apparent is, and salespeople always think they're great, and you're not going to find, a good salesperson that's not, but they highly overrated their skills in a number of different areas, whether it was presentation or closing or prospecting. And so, on the one hand, they're telling you how great they are at closing. On the other hand, they're not closing. And then when you take a look at their profile and you realize that from an assessment standpoint, they don't have closing skills. It's not even part of their makeup. You've definitely got a problem.
Well, what we're going to do is we start to move into this, we're going to take a break, and we'll come back and get further into discussions on the assessments and how you start to drive that process of really knowing what to do next.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Find out about new shows, featured guests, and what's up this week. Find us on Facebook by searching keyword Voice America.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. Do you have a question or comment about today's program? Please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Welcome back. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It. This is a pre-recorded show, so if you're going to try to call in, probably won't help you. But you can send us an email if there's anything that interests you from today's show. You can email us at rick@theeg.com. That's T-H-E-E-G.com. The Executive Group is a consulting firm that's been in business 20 years, and today's show is about developing Salesforce effectiveness. My guest and client, actually, over the last 10 years is Paul Dorfler. And we're talking about becoming more effective in developing your sales force from the hiring aspect to the development aspect. And in the second session, we'll want to talk about the drivers that allow us to work with folks like Paul and help really determine where you're going to go from not only a selection standpoint but a development standpoint through the use of assessments. And there are so many assessments on the market today. I mean, there's the DISC, and there's the Predictive Index, and there's the Caliper, and there's the Myers-Briggs, and there's the CHALI, which is a little different in its nature and its approach. But nonetheless, most people are familiar with many, if not all, of those that I just listed. Most people will not be familiar with the instrument that we use, which is called the 16PF. And we'll have an upcoming show that talks about testing per se that gets more into that. But the reason we use the 16PF, and we've used it for 17 of the 20 years we've been working with Salesforce, is that it's probably one of the single biggest predictors of behavior that you're ever going to find. And it's a mainstay. But rather than to get into the 16PF, let's talk about what it does and why I use it. That when you look at salespeople, and you look at the difference between hunters and farmers, and you're trying to get a baseline on either selecting this person for that right role, or whether you're trying to get a baseline on what you're going to do from a development standpoint, or how long we're going to keep them, the assessments can really help you determine that. And so, Paul, when you stepped into the new role, and you had your sales force that you're trying to assimilate and determine, one individual became out glaring that you felt you had a problem with, and so if you would speak to what I told you you would see or probably were seeing, which is all driven from the assessment piece that we had, and then the suggestions and recommendations I had and what happened, if you'd share that story real quick, because you also sent us a testimonial letter on that.
Oh, absolutely. And now that I'm so familiar and comfortable with the assessments, coming into a new role, I realized very quickly to get salespeople through it just as quick as possible. I'd done the interview. Obviously, they're already incumbent roles, but really get an understanding quickly how can I hit the ground running with these salespeople, both in coaching and also understanding where their motivations are. So this particular individual I had met with three times. I had my suspicions immediately about some motivation issues and things of that nature. So sure enough, I started to put the immediate performance plan in place in terms of expectations and where we needed to go. And as the assessment came back, as we went through that process, it was glaring that, yes, huge motivation issues, the ability to problem solve, the ability to multitask, the ability to do all of the things that, you know, a sales rep needs to do in this role, which is not there. And quite frankly, sat down, not with the instrument, but sat down just on a one-on-one performance and talked turkey with about, here's our expectations and here's where I see you at. Within 24 hours, the individual resigned. So that was, it was kind of a blessing for me because I, you know, coming into a new role, you hate to have to sit and deal with performance right off the bat. I mean, it's always uncomfortable to deal in the human, you know, dynamic of performance in terms of non-performance, but you have to do it.
And so here's the really funny part that Paul and I got a big kick out of, and that is when I provided the feedback back to Paul and said, you know, if you lean on this guy hard enough and put together a strict enough performance plan and you really set the standards and kind of raise the bar, he's probably going to quit on you sooner or later. Well, it wasn't 24 hours later that the guy resigned.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the assessment. Sometimes people will say, well, you know, our assessments is, you know, are they really valuable? And in this case, it specifically was because all the behaviors that spoke to it were there. And the thing about the 16PF is that it measures 16 different dimensions of behavior. And what we know is that behavior is the single biggest predictor of performance. And if you can understand the behavior, so whether you're looking for a hunter or a farmer, no matter what you're looking for, or a sales engineer, or a systems engineer, or an inside salesperson, or an outside salesperson, whether you're looking at someone who sells at the C level, or just sells commodity items, or sells transactions, you can understand from a behavioral standpoint if those salespeople really have what it takes to become involved in that, which is why when you look at the kinds of clients we've worked with over the years, that assessment process has played itself out over and over and over and over again. So, you know, you can, just the old adage, you can guess or assess. So in Paul's case, is he steps into a new role, he's saying, I've already got an existing sales force, but I don't know anything about them. And how long will it take me to learn what I need to learn about them? And in the process we used to roll out, it helped Paul really step to the next level in terms of what the development pieces are. So as you got the feedback, Paul, from your sales force and what was there, what were the immediate things that you were able to take advantage of, you know, as a result of the process?
Well, first of all, it was really clear who the hunters and farmers were and who said they were and were they actually there, or did they have those behaviors? The fact that they're aggressive, they're competitive, but they're empathetic, and they're going to get out there and just start, you know, knocking on doors or making calls, whatever it takes, versus the other on the farmer. And knowing that we have a very, very high expectation of sales growth, I needed to make sure those farmers were on the right accounts and working the right territories to make sure new sales were coming in. So that was first and foremost. And we separated that out and then made some account transfers based on what we found there. And to say, you know, I know you really think you're a hunter, but I think, you know, Linda's going to do a lot better in this role than you are. But, oh, by the way, I need your skill set over here, and I need you to manage this account because it's not being managed correctly, and we're in jeopardy of losing that account. So we now have plenty of data in front of you to say, okay, here's where I can put the right people and move them around quickly, and then coach to that. And that's really just so critical, the fact that you can take that development report, you can pull out the behaviors that they're strong in, and help them, you know, use that strength, at the same time understand where their challenges are and coach to those challenges and minimize the effects of the challenges.
Well, Paul spoke to the development report, and the piece is that there are actually two reports. One is a selection report, and that selection report, what it does, it against the 16 different behaviors that a person elicits or possesses, the sales selection report maps out against the behaviors and whether or not they're high probability for success or low probability for success. in its evaluation. The development report that Paul speaks to is geared and written differently. It's actually a great coaching tool, which we'll talk about, you know, toward the end when we get into the development and coaching. But, you know, to Paul's point is that once you understand the behaviors and what makes that person tick and where the gaps lie, it becomes a lot easier, you know, to manage the process. And so the gaps then, most people associate the gaps as a gap in sales competency. But really there's a greater link to gaps in behavior that creates the gap in the competency that's there. So, for example, if a person isn't overly comfortable being in social settings and tends to worry and has some self-doubt, they might do better in an inside customer support role than an outside hunter role. But nonetheless, it helps you understand that the behavior is going to get in the way of their sales ability and their sales outcome. So it's about coaching and managing to the behavior more than it is to, or as much as it is to develop the competency. So in the world of salespeople, we know that there are 8 core behaviors that statistically come up consistent in all sales roles. And we know that those salespeople and those sales traits must be the degree of warmth and friendliness they possess, the degree of reasoning and problem solving, their emotional resolve or their ability to bounce back from stress or adversity, their competitive drive or level of assertiveness, the degree of optimism, the way in which they believe or value the rules that are there, their social boldness, their comfortableness in social settings, and their self-confidence. Those 8 core behaviors are critical elements that show up in all the work we've done in 20 years using this process. And it also shows up in all the validation studies we've done. So we've done validation studies for Republic Industries, for Batesville Casket, for Cisco Foods, and those 8 behaviors consistently emerge across the sales dynamics and even with one of our clients called Atlas Copco. But those behaviors show consistent across the sales domains or successful salespeople. So when we come back from the break, I'm going to have Paul talk about some of the behaviors that were observed and some of the decisions he was able to make within his first company and his second company. So we'll be glad you're listening. You're listening to Voice of America, the Business Channel. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, and with a company called The Executive Group. And you can reach us at www.theeg.com.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just 2 salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
Looking for exciting video content live and on demand? Visit www.voiceamerica.tv for exclusive content you just can't find anywhere else. That's voiceamerica.tv. Tune in now.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. If you have a question or comment about today's program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to the voiceamerica.com. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It? I'm your host, Rick Thiemann. The What's Leadership Got to Do With It format follows the concepts in the book, which is also called What's Leadership Got to Do With It. The book should be available hopefully at the time that our last show, which is scheduled for December 19th. Hopefully the book will be ready for those of you who are interested in a copy. But anyway, we're talking with Paul Dorfler, a client of mine over the last 10 years, and we've done a lot of sales work with. And just before the break, we got into talking about behaviors and the core behaviors that are essential and how you can actually measure those against a person's general makeup. But once you understand what those behaviors are, then it's important to understand that there's a couple things that are next to pay attention to, and that is that there's three things that are critical that makes up a salesperson's success. It's not just their technical competence, and some people can be successful just having a high degree of technical competence. But it's beyond the technical competence, it's the sales competence. In other words, the prospecting, the handling objections, the leading voicemail, the closing skills, the account management skills. Those sales skills are the second piece that comes into a successful salesperson. But the most important thing to understand, and this gets so lost in translation, the most important thing to understand is it's the person's behavior and where they're at in their sales process and their mindset beyond just their personality that can help you understand whether or not that person's got a chance to succeed or not in your ability to coach them. So Paul, there's two examples in your very first company that you were with that, you know, were pretty glaring as we looked at test results. We talked about performance and where you could go and how you could help determine what your next step was with them. And unfortunately, the next step was to let both those people go. But the things that we talked about beyond performance, which is obviously a criteria for letting people go, but beyond performance then says, can the performance ever come back, or are we just got the wrong people in the wrong role? So speak to the two things we talked about, you know, you're being able to identify those things quicker.
Sure. And you spoke to the one, obviously, on the technical side, that both of these individuals, it wasn't a situation with technical ability. They both had strong technical ability. When it came to the sales ability, however, that's where it really, the assessment really flushed that out. And the first gentleman, you know, really had a real tough time dealing with the multitasking that was necessary to go on, the wishy-washiness. His competence was just not there. So when he was talking to a client, he might technically be competent, but he wasn't exuding confidence in the processes and how he's constantly served and that nature. And then there also tended to be an aloofness or laziness to him that, would come across in the sales call. And, again, there wasn't that confidence level just really, really got in his way. The other, it really scored extremely well in the first eight categories that Rick talked about. However, really had kind of lost interest in the industry and in loved sales, but it was a tough sales role, and actually had kind of one of those that kind of retired on the job but just forgot to tell us about it. It came through, and again, the sales profile was extremely high, so you're looking at it saying, why isn't this person successful? And then you realize that, hey, the will is so important in this, and as we had our weekly one-on-ones and started walking through all of the things that were all the obstacles that she was running into to prevent her selling more, it really became apparent that, you know what, it just, that wasn't no longer her cup of tea. She just wasn't going to tell us that. So in the exit interview, that came out loud and clear, by the way. And that's good. That's what good reason to do exit interviews. But those are two very, very good examples.
Well, you know, when you look at then sitting down and identifying your A, B, and C performers as you're doing in your new role with the new firm you've just joined, but as you sit down and you look at your A, B, C performers, you know, taking to heart what you learned in the first number of years we worked together with your first sales force and now with your second, you know, the takeaway then says as you start to right size the people and you start to look at where your gaps lie, you know, what have you been able to utilize from the process going into the new role in terms of quickly identifying, you know, your hunters and farmers, so to speak?
Yeah, that's really, having a high work ethic, problem solving skills is a big part of it. The fact that I know now out of all of the salespeople who are my best problem solvers. So if we're under a problem account or a problem situation, who do I go to and who don't I go to? I have another very good example is a situation where there's just a lot of ambiguity in this whole sales process on a new product launch that we're doing. Well, I know who I can't go to for help because I know that that person cannot deal with ambiguity in a way that needs to be dealt with. And quite frankly, trying to put that person in that role is going to do nothing but frustrate that person and also frustrate me because I'm not getting the results that I need in that role. So I immediately, you understand what everyone's strengths are and you also understand what the limitations are. And so you can manage and coach, much, much easier because you know if you have the right person in that role based on how they've, what their assessment results are being interpreted.
Well, and to that point, when we look at the assessments that we use and the way in which you use those assessments, and of course, when I say assessments, I am speaking in the plural context, is that we don't always just use one assessment. We may use a battery of assessments, but the predominant one we use is the 16PF. But when I speak to the competencies around behavior, I'm really talking about in terms of a person's thinking skills, their values, their morals, their ethics, their goals, their fears, their motivators. So if a person has certain types of fears, that's going to show up in the sales side. If this person has certain types of motivations, it's going to show up in the sales side. So as an example, one of our clients sells into the industrial space. And there was an individual who was a degreed engineer, extremely intelligent. Test scores told us he was just brilliant off the charts. Test scores also showed us he was competitive, aggressive, domineering, a little irritable, a little confrontational. And where it showed up was he would wind up arguing with customers. And his need to be right, this is back to the behavior thing, his need to be right and kind of impact his or impart his knowledge and his dominance and his kind of sarcastic demeanor began to rub customers the wrong way. And so, customers started complaining. Well, when we worked the sales manager to help him understand, so what are the developmental things, this guy didn't have a high level of intuition and had a high level of anger. Well, we started creating development plans around that in terms of the behavior things to change the behavior. And I think most people miss the mark of where the coaching needs to come from or that piece to it. So when you look at then behavior as a means of understanding what's there and if it can be coachable, and the one example of with Paul who spoke about the guy who kind of had no sense of urgency, a little on the lazy side, and was kind of, didn't deal with ambiguity very well, it became very apparent that those behaviors weren't going to change, and you're going to spend more time kicking the guy and pulling the guy to success than it's worth keeping him on staff. So you really wind up eliminating a lot of your headaches, if you will, by knowing what you're dealing with. But you can also, and the gentleman I just spoke to is now in a senior role and is advanced in the management because as he worked through the coaching piece, as he took the coaching to heart, he began to change some of his behaviors and his thinking. But I can even remember I did a training class for them, and the level of impatience this guy showed up in the training class because in the back he'd just stand up, and then halfway through the training class he decided he was going to take off and go to the restroom and just walk out. So you see the demeanor and the personality show up. Now, how do you manage it and how do you coach to it? So, as we work with Paul over the last two firms he's been with, providing that feedback back to him then helps him make those decisions in a more timely fashion versus having to drag his feet figuring out what to do next. Not that you're indecisive, Paul, but...
Right. No, exactly. And the other is you also know how, if you have somebody in a role and they are coachable, or you also know, it gives you a good hint, do I need to make a joint sales call to get this thing done because, this guy's overly trusting and... You need some suspicion about what's going on. If you're overly optimistic, overly trusting, he goes in to negotiate a fairly large deal, he's probably not a very good negotiator if he's got a high trust level. You need a certain amount of suspicion in a sales role, and so now I can pair that guy up with myself or somebody else that, that is very good in that area and can help and, you know, team sell, if you will, and minimize his limitations with another person's strengths that we need in that role. So it's very good information.
Well, when we're about ready to take a break again. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about training as a means of driving sales success, and we're going to talk about training versus coaching and some ideas and things that I have in terms of concepts around that. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It? This section is on developing Salesforce effectiveness. I'm your host, Rick Thiemann. You can check us out on the web at www.theeg.com, and we'll come back after the break with my friend and guest, Paul Dorfler.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Salesforce Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com.
Stay connected. Sign up for our newsletter. Go beyond your favorite Voice America shows. Visit iradioblog.com.
For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It, featuring your host, Rick Thiemann. Do you have a question or comment about today's program? Please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to assessment@theeg.com. Now, back to Rick Thiemann.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to What's Leadership Got to Do with It? I'm your host, Rick Thiemann, with my guest, Paul Dorfler. And we're talking about developing Salesforce effectiveness. And in the first half of the show, we talked about the selection side, and we've kind of gotten into the development side, talked about using assessments in the process. Were those a point of value for Paul in his quest to develop a stronger sales team and do that quicker, faster, I might add. But, you know, in this segment, I want to kind of start to talk about the aspect of training, okay? And in terms of driving that piece, you know, as you look at developing a training outline or training budget, a number of my clients have used, well, two specifically are using Miller Hyman right now as we speak. One used the Sandler system, which now 2 years later is defunct, it's gone nowhere. But, you know, as you look at developing a training program, we know that training rarely sticks. In the training, as a general rule, winds up being nothing more than an exercise, no different than a flu shot. It wears off over time. So the training piece, if you're going to have an effective training program, the piece that comes into play is essential if you can create more of a train-the-trainer piece where you've got internal people who are going to train to the process to keep it ongoing. If not, it becomes futile. And one of our very, very large clients sent us a testimonial, and he said, And I'll quote this. He said, "The concepts and tools presented over the last 2 years are paying dividends. The professionalism and effectiveness of our sales force is much improved, and we have noted a growth rate much higher than the market current market." They were in the building business, in the lumber products arena, and had greater growth and market share, but we actually did two specific training programs in there that were geared around and provided train the trainer so that the training is ongoing and sustainable. And when training is not ongoing and sustainable, it usually withers and dies and wears itself out. Again, the effect of that flu shot. But I'm kind of building the case for development versus training, because in the development side, as Paul spoke earlier about our development process and the development report and its ability to use coaching as a more viable component to help people realize where their gaps lie. And in the coaching side, you know, as an example, I asked one manager at one time, I said, you know, when you look at we had a specific individual that we knew wasn't performing, and my recommendation had been not to hire this person in the first place, but they did, and they were having challenges. So when I asked the manager, I said, you know, what do you think this person's development needs are, and how are you going to help them get to the next level? And the manager said, well, he said, I need to ride with her more so she needs more experience, need to give her access to me whenever she needs me, and I need to teach her more about the pricing matrix because I don't think she understands really how our margins work as well, and she needs some help there. Well, in my interview with this gal and my evaluation and in the assessment and in her development report showed she had a low level of emotional stability, so she got upset. She kind of got crossways. She didn't like conflict, and she didn't have a lot of self-confidence. And the other thing I uncovered was she'd never really been in a pure sales role like she was in. So my advice to the sales manager was, look, she needs some things around selling. She needs maybe Gittimer's book on the literate book of selling. She needs to read a book called Questions That Sell by Paul Cherry. Here I am plugging other people's books. But the other thing is she needs a book called Developing Positive Assertiveness. She needs a book called Verbal Judo. She needs a book called The Influencer. Things that can help her understand how to change and modify her behavior to help her become more successful. And then that creates that true development plan. So, Paul, as we've worked with your folks to help on the development side with your new firm that you're in, what are the things that you've been able to take away from the development report that speaks specifically to behavioral changes versus sales competency improvement?
Yes, and that's a big part of the results that come out of the assessment. And that, so for instance, I have a new sales rep that just came on board. Immediately, you know, it shows he's got a tendency to go into a sales call and do the proverbial show up and throw up. Loves to talk, very high enthusiasm, which showed up in the assessment. He's got a high degree of social boldness, which showed up, and that's all great, but when it comes to listening skills and sitting down and really, you know, how do I understand what the needs of my client are, they're just not there. So we actually role-played in through a coaching session what a new, it was the first time lunch for the client. You already seen him a couple of times, there was some interest, you said, I'm going to take you out of lunch, and I started right out as, okay, what is it you're going to say, and what is it you're going to listen for, so that you don't appear to be needy, and you don't appear to be clinging to whatever it is. And so we came up with two or three questions and, you know, something as simple as, hey, we'll keep you up tonight anyway. You know, things of that nature, open-ended questions. So, you know, coaching to that. Well, the result is he comes back and he said, Paul, it was great. I mean, I learned so much. He walked through everything that he learned about and what some of the initiatives they're going to do next year, some of the things they're struggling with, who they're unhappy with in terms of the current suppliers, and the whole bit. And he thanked me to say, look, you know, if you wouldn't have known that was my behavior dependency and you wouldn't have known, you know, you wouldn't have coached me going into this thing, I would have shown up and thrown up. And so it was kind of, that's just a small success story, but it is so powerful because he'll remember that now going into the next call and the next call and the next call. He'll slowly change that behavior to where he really realizes, hey, I need to be listening. I need to be asking good questions. I don't need to be talking about how great I am.
So the developer report, what the outcome of the developer report that Paul's speaking to, then gets into a dialogue that provides feedback back to the individual on their behavior and speaks to them in terms of, if their level of assertiveness is so high, how do you curtail that? Or if my level of assertiveness isn't high, how do I overcome that? Or if my listening skills, if I tend to talk more than I listen, you know, how do I learn to change that and listen for that piece in my sales style? How do I change that and how do I move that forward? So the behavioral aspect then for people to be able to self-manage is what the report is designed to do. But it's also designed as a coaching tool for managers to be more effective in their ability to read people, understand their motivation, and then coach to the motivation and coach to where the gaps are. And then obviously along the way you're going to build upon with the competency gaps that says, okay, so if I tend to talk more than I listen, yeah, it's about paying attention to that behavior, but it's also about learning strategies to ask questions so that I don't talk and I let the other person talk. So as we began to look at then, you know, the process, the other thing that we use in this process is we have salespeople fill out what's called a life history brief. And that life history brief is designed to help them look at themselves holistically and start the self-evaluation, much like a performance appraisal would, but it's a really deep dive into the chronological history of how that person became a salesperson and what and the steps they've done and the things that they've not done that they need to be doing or need to start to do. It helps the sales manager close those gaps. So, Paul, you used that besides the development report, did you not?
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. And it's so revealing on the life history brief, because now you truly understand. They walk through their education, and you understand why they struggled so much in college, and the fact that if I'm going to put them on a project where they need to do a lot of research and work, it ain't going to happen because they're street smart, and it shows up in their life history brief that they're street smart. So you know what? Don't put them on a research project developing a new product. Put them on something that's going to let them use their street smarts to bring in more work. So, yes.
Well, that kind of wraps up today's show. My guest has been Paul Dorfler, a longtime friend and client that I've worked with for years in helping him develop his sales force. You've been listening to What's Leadership Got to Do With It? I'm your host, Rick Thiemann. You can check us on the web at www.theeg.com. Developing Sales Force Effectiveness is a program that we have kind of perfected over the last 20 years to help organizations improve their everything from their selection to their development to their coaching. I want to thank Paul for taking a busy time out of his busy schedule to help. And for those of you who may be interested, give us a call. You can email us at rick@theeg.com if you've got any questions. And if you're interested, we'd be glad to provide a free sample development report so you can see how to use it as a coaching tool. So have a great week, and we'll see you in a week.
Thank you again for tuning in to What's Leadership Got to Do With It? Please join your host, Rick Thiemann, again next Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Central, and 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week. 20 years of research shows us that 20 to 25% of an organization's sales force is underwater. A salesperson selling at 75% of quota is costing you at least $5,000, including opportunity costs. Our program, Developing Sales Force Effectiveness, shows you how to manage these underperformers more effectively. Improving the sales effectiveness of just two salespeople will give you a 100% return on investment. For more information, visit the Executive Group website at www.theeg.com. For the past 20 years, the Executive Group has helped organizations recruit, select, train, develop, and coach their most valuable asset, their people. Whether entry-level or top leadership, the Executive Group uses a variety of tools considered to be the gold standard in assessments and development to provide insight and direction to help our clients show the greatest return on their most valuable investment. For more information on how the Executive Group can help you link strategic intent with human capital, visit our website at www.theeg.com.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.